All right, folks, we are back at the FlagFlick.com podcast. Stefan Tiedorf here with my co-host, as per usual, Scott McLeod. Scotty, busy week for you. What do you have going on right now?
Yeah, it's a crazy time. PGA Show is next week, so there's a lot of companies. Obviously, it's virtual this year, so there's a lot of introductions, a lot of product launches, a lot of embargoes, things going on of that nature. So anybody that's in the golf media is just being inundated with marketing people right now and dealing with stories related to equipment, banking stuff, all sorts of things. So yeah, January, you'd think you'd be relaxing, but not so much.
Yep, Sim 2 got announced, saw that, you know, the Ping G25, wow, they went back in time.
That goes way back.
Yeah, G425s, Woods, Irons, you know, Callaway coming out with some stuff, PXG, lower price point, you know, title. Everyone's got things coming out. Keep an eye on it. We're not going to get into all of it yet. I'm sure throughout time we will talk more about it, and we actually will talk more about the Sim line later today with Tomo from TaylorMade. But big week, more news coming out all over. You know, it's crazy. There's some good news. There's some interesting news. Where do we want to start? Let's start with Kevin Na, I guess. Kevin Na picks out a win and keeps on grinding out a great career. Fifth win on tour, you know, won four in a row now, 4 years, which is, puts him nine behind Dustin Johnson. So almost getting there to Dustin's, 13 years in a row or whatever he's got?
14, actually.
Yeah. It's just crazy. But
it is.
Yeah, nice to see. I love Kevin Na. I think this is, talk about a resurgence of character, of fanship. I don't even know if that's the word. But like, I don't find nobody says bad things about Kevin Na anymore.
No, I mean, you're right. I mean, he went from being a little bit of the heel of the tour, people, you know, slow play, you know, high scores, all sorts of different antics, obviously had a case of the yips, and a lot of people, you know, especially the social media, you know, they're harping on him and stuff like that. But next thing you know, he's walking in putts, he's got a smile on his face, and yeah, you're right. All of a sudden, fans turned around, love this guy now, and they can't stop talking about it, it seems. And hey, you know what? Great playing for sure. Getting it done on the weekend with low numbers. And yeah, you can't be nothing but excited as far as watching this guy.
No, it's awesome. It's one of those things where it's funny. You see the comment at the start of the week by Kiz. You know, why do you still show up? Well, they pay a lot of money for 20th place. Kevin Na's right in that bubble where he's aware there's maybe 7-8 tournaments a year where he's got a chance to top 10. Like, it sounds bad. And he's even said, like, if I don't even have a chance for those type of things where like a top 20 is not even realistic, I'm not going there unless it's a major, which you never know, you know, might catch wind in a bottle. But it's just crazy that, you know, people were freaking out about Kiz's comments. Some loved it, some hated it. I think it's perfect. There's no other sport like that where it's like, hey, just for showing up, I'm gonna get paid, so why wouldn't I?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think he portrays exactly what professional golf is like to professional golfers and what is not understood by most fans. Most fans judge professional golfers by wins and wins only. This is their job. Their job is to make money. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes doesn't mean winning. They go through their whole career. We're talking about Kevin Na. This is a guy who's been out on tour for 18 years, you know, turned pro at 17, been on the PGA tour for that many years. Yeah. And, you know, he's got 5 wins. So, you know, you don't go out there expecting to be a winner. You go out being a good loser. You want to win. You want to win the big prizes. You want to do the things that's going to keep you out on tour. But the reality
like
is
cuts, you know, leaving that's a win each week. Like, you know, my guy, Martin Trainer, makes a cut this week and huge win for confidence for someone like that hasn't made it in a while. But Kevin Na, he was in that boat for a few years where it's just like, I just need to make a cut here.
Yeah. And so, you know, Kiz is not wrong with that. And, you know, it's never wrong because it's their perspective as far as their career and their life. He's just refreshing enough to say it. A lot of other players don't want to admit it and don't want to be vulnerable in public and saying, hey, you know what? I know I can't win. Right. And he said it before. There's certain, you know, when he talked about a match play was something he could win, but some other events he couldn't. He's just being honest. And, you know, the fact that they do make a lot of money, for top 20s. Yeah. You know, top 20, you know, is going to be in most tournaments. Now you're into six digits, you know, you're breaking that 100K mark. And you know, that pays off if you do that a bunch of times and, you know, you live a pretty good life doing that.
Yeah. You can look back to some early years for Kevin, just struggles, right? Like, you know, 32 events, made a mil. That's a lot of events for a mil back then. You know, and then a couple down years, you know, where he had the yips, you know, he 2013 got hurt.
Yeah, and we're not talking yips with, you know, with putter here.
No, this
we're
guy
talking
went
yips with a
swing,
driver. Yeah.
Swing over the ball with a driver. And people, they almost had to make a rule for him, like the Kevin Na rule. But a lot of good stories out of the week. You know, Christian Kirk had to come top three on his major medical exemption after his battle with alcoholism and depression, and goes into a relatively good field down there in the Sony Open and decides, I'm good. I'll do that. Top two. So he keeps his card after Pit Camp win last year. You know, Kiz with his comments, our guy probably didn't really get a story out there in Martin Trainer, but a big story. And, you know, a guy that's been working really hard on his swing and it looks really good. And I think, you know, I was talking to his caddy, Aaron Crawford, on Sunday. And I just said, you know, great work out there, boys. Like, bogey free. When was the last time Martin's done that, right? Like, just done that first time on the PGA Tour. Like, that's the type of stuff where it's like he's in the same situation as Christian Kirk, where it's like, I got to get things together fast because my card's running out at the end of this year if I don't. So it's just stuff like that where the stories this year are going to get good for those guys that, you know, lesser known stories, but that are important.
Yeah, we're on the back half now of that 2020-21 extension. So now we actually have consequences at the end of the season, which we didn't at the end of last year. Everybody had those rollovers, whether it's LPGA, PGA, you know, Korn Ferry Tour. So now we can get back to the drama of keeping your card. And, you know, Martin Trainer, I mean, what, 38 events without, you know, he had a withdrawal in there or whatever, without making a cut. I mean, you know, it was a continual thing that we're keeping an eye on. And, you know, you texted me over the weekend, and all of a sudden he shoots in the 60s and you're like, whoa, you know, look out
the
here.
The last time he had shot in the 60s on the PGA Tour, I was carrying his golf bag in end of 2019.
That's insane to think
of. It's insane. Yeah, absolutely insane. So and then he goes out bogey free 65 on Sunday, and it's like, you know, people, like, we had what's his name, Mark Anguiano on here, so yeah, like, this guy's really good. He's become like almost the butt joke of the PGA Tour a little bit. This guy's really good and he will find it, and yeah, he's showing, if this can continue, watch out. He'll never be a guy that wins every single makes cuts every single week. It's just, you know, he hits it long and it's a little squirrely, but if the putter's going and he's keeping it in play, he's going to be one of these journeyman guys, hopefully, that can just keep his card year in and year out, make a good living.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, those are interesting stories to watch. I mean, unfortunately, you know, a lot of people end up watching just the top 10 players that are out there. But everybody's got a story, as we know, and some of the guests we've had on the podcast here. So it'll be fun to follow him. And he's back in the field this week at the Amex.
And also the flip side too, right? We talk about like people hanging on to their cards, but there's also the Korn Ferry guys that, like, you know, our guy there, wow, I'm drawing a complete blank on his name. Canadian guy.
Taylor Pendrith?
Pendrith, sorry, buddy. Our guy there, like, he should have been on the PGA Tour this year, but because of this wraparound season, like, those guys and gals from the Smetch Tour, they're itching. They're like, just get me through this year. I'm ready to get up there. So there's a lot of stories. It's going to be a cool end of the year. I think people are going to be sweating more. They got comfortable maybe with this longer, you know, season and a half thing. It's going to be a It's going to be interesting going down the stretch. A lot of golf, as you mentioned, the Amex is this week at PGA West. There's no amateurs in the field. There's also, which makes me so happy, no amateurs at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. So is it just the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro?
I guess it's definitely going to be a different tournament. They're down to two courses. They cut the Monterey Peninsula Club out of the rotation. They're going to be able to set up the golf courses differently too. So they're going to be less like resort golf courses. They're going to be more like a tour condition. So we should see something different as far as the scoring. And yeah, I can't imagine what it's going to look like. I mean, once everybody gets a taste of the broadcast and sees actual, you know, shots played by pros, getting the balance of the attention. I don't know if fans will want to go back to the amateur format. I know, you know, there's a lot of money that's raised. Yeah, I know there's a lot of money raised for good causes and stuff around the Monterey Peninsula as a result of it and things. But, you know, it certainly doesn't always end up in great stuff for us. And we end up talking about Bill Murray far too much.
Yep, absolutely. But the LPGA is playing, you know, their winners only event this week with amateurs. So it's odd, right? Like,
yeah,
that we're the LPGA doesn't have a choice, sadly, it feels like, right? Like Brooks playing with Kirk Cousins and Josh Donaldson. I haven't really looked at the pairings because, again, I just don't care about who's playing with who amateur-wise, but the LPGA has to do these things. And it was kind of shocking to see that they are doing that type of thing out on the LPGA still. I mean, but I just feel like they don't have a choice. They got to bring the people in like that. Somebody, you know, Vikings fans are going to watch golf, the LPGA for the weekend to see what Kirk Cousins' swing is. And even if they show up for 10 minutes to watch him play a couple holes, like that's money in the LPGA's pocket.
Yeah. And this is a weird event too. You got to remember it started as a non LPGA tour event. It was a Diamond Resorts Championship. It was put on as basically a celebrity event, a fun event. The guy who runs Diamond Resorts, who's, you know, pretty active as far as golf is concerned. And then basically they rolled it into an LPGA event. So it's more of a celebrity event first. That's obviously why we see the groupings, you know, Brooke, for an example, you know, the players are by themselves and then they have two celebrities with them. And there's, you know, 55 celebrities in the field, a lot of retired baseball players, a good smattering of some basketball players. I saw Grant Hill was in there, a few of the usual Pebble Beach people, Larry the Cable Guy and stuff like that. You know, it's part of the circuit now is really what it is. And yeah, it is kind of unusual. It is Florida, I guess, but you know, and no fans there, even though they do have the amateurs. So obviously they've got some you know, severe protocols in place. And I know, for an example, you know, you talked about Brooke being there. Brooke would not be there if she didn't feel it was a safe situation for her. So that she's kind of a good barometer as far as the safety around that event.
Yeah, I mean, well, she lives in Florida, so how safe really? Sure. Yeah, at that point, right? European Tour's back this week. They're in Abu Dhabi. Westwood playing there, defending. Rory playing there. This guy's 100 runner-ups at this event, and he's saw an interview today where he's like, "Get me! I want to win this." He says he's played well enough to win here many times, but someone just played a touch better, a couple bad bounces. Justin Thomas, though, is in the field, and earlier this week, Ralph Lauren sent out a PR, I'm going to call it the PR dream from a clothing brand's standpoint. And what I mean by this is, and I actually am going to argue against it too at the same time at one point, but what I mean by this is they made it so, A, it makes them look good because they're saying, hey, this doesn't represent us. We want Justin to rehab, but we are leaving the door open for him to return. That the point if, like, for Justin not to now do what he has to do to, you know, get his relationship with the public, become an advocate, show that he's learned and changed. Like, he basically has no choice but to go back there. Because, and that way, it's like, hey, we left the door. We wanted him back. We just wanted him to, like, it just seemed like they knew exactly what they were doing. And that if he wasn't coming back and they put that statement out there, like, that, if I'm Justin Thomas's team, that's like a lawsuit somehow, right? Like, you're basically setting me up for failure. So I feel like there's already an agreement in place. I actually placed a bet with a friend, $50, that he's wearing Ralph Lauren again. He's playing it again officially. Now, he is wearing it already this week, which maybe there's some rumors out there. Is it just a suspension from Ralph Lauren? What is it? And my other buddy's saying he's going to Nike. So I mean,
those are just rumors. We see those on social media.
No, he's not going anywhere, in my opinion.
No,
I got $50 riding on it. So my buddy Reed's going to owe me $50 soon. what are your thoughts? I think at this point, it just seems like a suspension. It's just the right wording publicly that they had no choice to do.
Yeah, I would say it's we'll call it a temporary separation with the caveat that there has to be some education component that they're going to work in there, that obviously, you know, 5 days afterwards, after, you know, he obviously uttered this homophobic slur during the broadcast at the Century Tournament of Champions, that they all of a sudden, you know, they've got to formulate a plan for that and see what that looks like, not only publicly, but privately as well. And, on, and working with him to do that. So you're right. I think it's just basically a temporary separation, leaving the room for, you know, re-education, as maybe we'll call it. Although, you know, it would have been helpful maybe if they'd announced that a little bit earlier. But we'll see. I don't think he's really going to go anywhere. It's really in the end. And, you know, if they do, you know, that's fine, but hopefully they do something positive out of this, and create something that's a really good situation, for everyone involved.
Yeah. And I think I saw some people arguing, well, you know, Ralph Lauren has, you know, that, a building here, and like, look at them. They're, you know, counteracting what they're saying here in the public and all this stuff, and how this country's, you know, it's illegal to be gay and all this stuff, and they have ties there, and it's very difficult as a business to make sure everything's there. I can tell you one thing though, like I was doing some reading, they were recently named by the Human Rights Campaign as the best place to work for the LGBTQ equality, which if that's the case, clearly this is going to mean a lot to them. I think Justin's learned a lot. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he has been fined by the PGA Tour. You'll never hear it. I wouldn't be surprised if they said to him, you know, don't come play at the Sony. Not that he ever committed. I don't think he ever would commit to the Amex. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of suspension. That's why he's out there, but they'll never admit to it. And that's just my thoughts. Maybe you think differently on that.
No, I think he was just going to be in transition flying from Hawaii to Abu Dhabi. So I don't think the logistics would work for him to play in Sony and get over there, even if he's flying private. So I think, you know, they'll probably end up with a fine. They'll obviously keep it quiet, but I don't think there was any type of suspension that was involved in there. I mean, if you look through the guides for the PGA Tour and all their discipline and how they go about things, I don't think that would have been a part of the situation.
Yeah, if you haven't yet and you are hearing about this for the first time, definitely go look up Eamon Lynch's article. Yeah. On this story, Eamon wrote a great article. It's called Justin Thomas Learned Something This Week, Everyone Else Not So Much. I think that shouldn't surprise you. If you just Googled went on Twitter or Instagram, Justin Thomas, you can see there's a lot that people need to learn still on why it is. And it was just tough reads. And, you know, I ended up having some tough conversations with some friends too that maybe still don't necessarily look at it this way. And I actually think Matt Janella had a good point though on Twitter. He said, you know, I think Ralph Lauren could have done a little bit better here, in the sense of like, why couldn't they have partnered up and done something different instead of just dropping him, which clearly now we're seeing it. Like if he showed up this week in all white with no logos, it would prove maybe something different. But, you know, like use it as a campaign to teach versus, you know, drop somebody on one mistake.
Yeah.
Which I actually I hadn't thought about that, because I was totally fine with this move by Ralph Lauren. I still am. Their company, they can do whatever the heck they want. Sure. You know, who represents them is up to them. And Justin Thomas can say whatever he wants and respect that, you know, that might have consequences. But I think there was a learning opportunity. Let's not say it can't still happen though. Based on what I'm seeing here, I have a feeling more is to come, and there's, you know, these things don't happen in 5 days.
Yeah, they don't. And I think it's easy to, you know, to be critical and look at it from a very, you know, a close perspective, a quick perspective, but, you know, you can't always put these things together, you know, that quickly. And there's a lot of moving pieces that are here. So I think in the end, we're going to see something positive out of it. And I think, you know, obviously for them, there's a lot of other people that were online talking about other issues related to companies and stuff like that. Unfortunately, you know, some of the stuff online, you know, how much fact it's based into, you have to really throw that out. So, and a lot of people don't look at it that, but I think Eamon Lynch's article was very succinct. It really represented, you know, a lot of the points in there, made them very well. And obviously being a gay man, he has a, you know, a strong perspective, much different perspective than, you know, than any of us would have as well. So I think people would be, you know, pretty smart to go and check that article out in Golf Week.
I agree. Tiger Woods doc part two, the final part of the series came out. I'm going to give it an underwhelmed is my final thoughts on it. None of this is new. I'm actually against the idea that this is a smear campaign. There's nothing smear about it.
No.
The people that were on it, yes, were friends. And people like, oh, you went against his back. There's people on there who were like, after this, Tiger never spoke to me again. We're best friends. Like, they have photos of him, never spoke with, like, he cut ties, right? Like, how you treat people, if you don't want things coming out about you, then don't do those things. All these things happen because Tiger did them. That doesn't mean it's a smear campaign. If anything, it just made me look at this guy as more human. At the end, it wraps up with the Masters. But yeah, overall, I just kind of left thinking, meh. My overall thought on it. But my biggest thing, where the thing that bugged me the most, and I don't even remember thinking it at the time, but I was watching it and I literally was like thinking, I'm so glad this isn't me, because I would not handle it the way Tiger did, was when they're at the Masters and Billy Payne is just ripping into him and acting like he's God. And that is the problem I've always had with Augusta National and in golf in general, is this God complex. We are better than you. And Augusta National, if that's me, I'm going up right after him and be like, you don't tell me who I am, you know, that you're, I don't care that you're disappointed in me. I'm here to play golf. I mean, I won your tournament. That's all it is. Stop making this bigger than it is. It's a golf tournament that you hand out silly green jacket at the end. Yeah. It doesn't really matter.
I don't think they really had a say in the matter, nor should have they, you know, offered an opinion that way. You know, and going back to discussing as far as Tiger cutting off people and stuff like that, the other way I thought about it, which was kind of interesting, which, you know, only he would know or whatever, was, you know, I wonder how many people he cut off, in a sense that he was trying to turn a corner in his life,
maybe
as far as the cut and to move forward, especially when you talk about his kids and family and trying to do things. And, you know, obviously you can see from the documentary, and we talked about it last week, was, you know, he had a very interesting childhood, different, you know, pressures and things, especially with his dad and so forth. And you just wonder what parts of that life he just kind of wanted to, you know, shovel away so he could move on and move forward. And, you know, that's not to condone anything that he did, but on the other side of it as well, you know, they're trying to make this into a documentary and make it, but they're trying to make it entertaining, I think, more than anything, more than a documentary. And I think that's part of that meh, is that, you know, as we talked about, they were trying to identify who is Tiger Woods. Well, I don't think it doesn't matter if you do 400 interviews and, you know, do, you know, have 250 people that you talk to, you're never going to know exactly what he's like. It just gives you some picture on their narrative, what they decide is the narrative and what it's going to be. So in the end, I think what was interesting though, is I had someone reach out to me, and I didn't watch the full documentary. I had read the book. They said, you know, does this change your perception of Tiger because of it? And that you specifically, just because, you know, you had watched it.
No, but I've also read the book, and this is one where, you know, I hate these people that the book's better than the movie. this is one where the book is way better than what you saw in that documentary.
More detailed in a book.
More detailed. Way better. I remember reading the book. When I finished it, I left it and just was like, I just felt bad for the guy. He's a kid that never got to be a kid. Yep. Tried to live that 20-year-old life when he had kids and a family when he shouldn't have. He didn't do anything illegal except for the DUI. but outside of that,
and that even, we know of.
Yeah, well, yeah. But, like, you know, having an affair isn't illegal. It's frowned upon. And I mean, even in certain circles, maybe it's not, right? Like, some people, that's the life they live. He didn't do anything illegal. So that's what really annoyed me with everything there, especially with Billy Payne. And I've never liked that guy, and so happy he's get out. I'm just done with him. And that just was the final straw. It's stuff like that. It's like, why are we even judging it? And I get why people are coming to the defense. At the end of the day, it's a story. making a documentary doesn't change anything. It's all out there anyway. So, you know, the people are like, oh, I'm not going to watch it. And then you can tell they all watch it because they know every detail of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff like that. So overall, it didn't change the perspective outside of just like, I can tell this guy's actually human. How he gets into that frame when he gets on a golf course and becomes just a killer is I will never understand, and nobody will, but overall just it was entertaining for 2 hours and I'll never watch it again.
Yeah. And I think that just blends into exactly what you just said about how he performs on the golf course. I think that goes to that separation mindset that, you know, he has, where he's very hyper-focused on what he's doing, which, you know, would lend into exactly the same thing of, okay, you know, here's my next focus. Here's what I'm going to do. That's gone. That's not even a part of it. In the end, you know what? It's going to get eyeballs because it's one of the, you know, top athletes of all time. These guys didn't do this for the sake of charity. So, you know, and they know it's going to get a lot of attention.
No one on there doing an interview did it for
free. No, it's exactly it. So, you know, in the end, we're talking about it, which is obviously going to drive more people to go talk or look at it, you know, subscribe to whatever subscription service that they can get it with for HBO. That's what it all ends up. In the end, it doesn't affect our lives, really. Nope. You know, so does it really matter in the end?
Nah, a couple hours of my time and wrapped up some stories. I think it's, you know, it's nice to see where he's been, where he got to. I think the biggest shock to people, and they really brushed over it, was you know, the pain and you know, the pain pill addiction.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really
yeah,
struggling yeah. through that one and the opioids and all that type of stuff. That's you know, that rumbled through the golf industry for years. Like, that wasn't a shock. I remember it was probably around 2013 when I ran into you at the golf store. And we had a conversation and you like blew my world, you know, talking about, yeah, here's what we're hearing right now it, you know, and concerns about it. And I was probably just like, nah, it's not real. And then, you know, the more you read the book and the more you hear about these type of things, it clearly is real. I think they brushed over it and probably for a good thing. I don't necessarily need to hear about somebody's drug addiction at that point, but, here we are. It's done with. I think it could have been better. I think what would have been the biggest sell was if it was like behind the scenes footage of, you know, in him just being himself, which I don't think you'll never get anyway.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that even if you go and do that, you're going to have critics on the other side going, oh, well, you know, you're painting him out in a certain way that he's this heroic guy or whatever. What about all his flaws? And, you know, you're not going to win one way or the other, but, you know, whatever. It is what it is.
Well, he's playing TaylorMade now. What a transition that was. And TaylorMade's coming out with some new products, Scott. We have Tomo back on the podcast here. What's Tomo going to be talking about?
Yeah, so I spent some time chatting with Tomo Bystead, who's the TaylorMade Director of Product Creation for Metal Woods, just chatting about the Sim2 Metal Woods, the drivers, the fairways, and the rescues that are coming out, just getting some really inside details of the design process. He's got some unique insight, too, about some things they did with the tour players, working with those tour players, how long this process has been. I think people will find it entertaining, and it's you know, deeper than, you know, just reading another press release or seeing another picture. This is the guy who's responsible for working with those players, be it, you know, DJ or Tiger, and he's got the details that nobody else has, and I think people will enjoy hearing this interview. Obviously, when you have the same name kind of carry through, but it's a second version of it, there's usually a lot of people that maybe, you know, let's say they're a little more critical as far as how much change there is. But obviously, we know there's a lot of change that has happened in this product. Mm-hmm. Why don't you kind of talk about those points a little bit and some of the key features that have really made the big jump from Sim to Sim 2?
Yes. You know, I think the whole naming conversation is for sure an interesting one. And it's been a definitely a point of debate. You know, for sure in the customer pre-lines, there was a couple of customers that were like, wow, this thing is totally different. Why are you still calling it Sim? You know, like, shouldn't this have a new name? I think, I don't know, for us, I mean, to be honest, from a personal perspective, I feel like names don't really make much of a difference. If it's a good club, you could call it whatever you want. It'll do well. You know?
Yeah.
So I think that whole part is a little bit overblown anyway. But I also feel like, you know, and this is going to maybe sound weird, but I almost feel like you want to under-promise with the name. Mm-hmm. I feel like doing the opposite is a little bit disingenuous, where you have this whole campaign of everything's new, and then you look at the club and it's like, that looks exactly like the last one you did.
Hmm.
I'd rather be the other way, where it's like totally different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, I don't know, if I look at like, I don't know, like, again, generic example, like Apple, right? They'll come up with a brand new thing and it's like, oh, but it's still the iPhone, whatever. Yeah. They don't make a big, it's just the next number in their line. But, and so I felt like for us, and also just, you know, I would say the other variable in there was COVID as well, in the sense that we didn't really run much marketing last year on Sim. So if you were in the market for a driver, you probably saw Sim and you may have tried it out and maybe bought it. But if you weren't in the market to buy new clubs and you didn't go to a golf shop, maybe you never even heard of this Sim thing. Mm-hmm. So it felt a bit too quick to leave it. Like, here we had this brand new thing we were trying to launch.
Yeah.
And then a year later, it's like gone. Like, what happened to the Sim thing? So that's the other thing where we felt like, let's just have a bit more continuity.
Yeah.
And I would say the final aspect of it was, at the end of the day, it's based on the same idea of the original Sim, of that whole idea of that shape being totally different, having that asymmetric inertia generator on the sole. Like, that's all the same. The shape part of it, this is the same. It's just made differently. So we felt like it still made sense to call it Sim. But we've had some blowback from people saying, well, if you'd called it something else, we would have sold more. Like, well, I don't know if that's true, but...
Yeah. I think they're just saying that.
But anyway. I think they're just saying that. Yeah. And I think also keeping it with Sim, I think, allowed us to keep some of the design cues, can have a bit more continuity to the colors, the logoing and all that, instead of just jumping around too much. I think, if anything, we were probably known for that back in the day, you know, a little bit back, maybe 7-8 years ago with the SLDRs and Jet Speeds and Aeroburn. Like, we had a lot of different like visual stuff going on back then. And I think we've tried to be a little bit more conservative in that regard lately, and certainly feel like we're bringing the consumer along for the journey with us a little bit more of like, this is our journey. And we're not trying to like surprise you at every turn with something different. So I feel like we made the right call, but hey, that's not for me to decide, I guess.
but I mean, there are some significant material changes as far as the design. And I know, you know, you're a guy who's always working on projects, working on different things, and they may not go into the next iteration, but you're thinking ahead of where you need to go. Is that sort of some of the configuration and the design of what you ended up with a Sim 2, especially in the driver, for an example?
Yeah. You know, I think when we did Sim and we when that started to come together, really, I would say in the early middle of sort of 2019, we were kind of, that project was in a pretty good spot, and we felt like, wow, this is going to be a really good driver. Like, our testing was showing just great numbers across the board, and we were like, how are we going to make this better? You know, like, this is going to be a really high bar. And so for the driver specifically, we had some projects in our advanced engineering group that we felt, were promising. This is one of those things where it was like this idea of a modular design of kind of tweaking each part independently and not having, you know, having to use the same material for the face and the back of the club necessarily, that they could be different if it's better that way. Yeah. So that was a cool thing. And we learned a ton. And I think one of the things that really put us in a good spot for this is that because we've used so much carbon in the last sort of 5 years, we've become really good at bonding. Bonding has become a really core competency with TaylorMade in terms of just how we assemble our clubs and the fact that we're doing the bonding, unlike other people, at the very end. What we're like, all the finishing happens and we put these together beautifully right at the end. And we felt like knowing how to do that on these carbon panels, we could actually extend it to make the whole thing out of things that essentially are just glued together.
Right.
Now, obviously, the ring, I actually have a kind of a cup here.
Perfect.
But one of the cool things about that, do you have one of these?
No, not yet. So I've seen it though, obviously.
Yeah, but this actually, so it actually clips in as well. So this one obviously has a belt and suspenders thing. So it's obviously everything is bonded in, but it also has a mechanical lock as well in how this comes together. So you can actually kind of just put it together like that. But
which is kind of crazy.
It's kind of crazy, right? But you know, you think about that, and so obviously now you can make this lighter. That's great. You can use a lot more carbon on the top and the bottom. And then you have completely unfettered access to the back of the face. And now you can do all the milling on the back of the face which has really changed the game in terms of how we kind of execute inverted cone. Inverted cone has been around for a long time, and we've done it more or less the same way over the years.
I kind of looked at it like a panel on the front of a staff bag, right? When they used to try to embroider it from the front side, and then they realized they could take the panel off, and you know, you could work with it from another way. But yeah, you end up the same thing with the face here.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that was really cool, and that was just a kind of a game changer for us in terms of how we approach to just designing the face. Period. Because all the previous inverted cones were done by essentially a lathe, right? So it's like it has to be a symmetric pattern, you know, in every direction. It's machined, but this one, we're now able to really manipulate thicknesses in all these kind of places. And we have several locations on the back that we measure against, and we can really control. And then as a result of that, simplify the speed injection process too. So a lot of really cool stuff happened when we were able to kind of modularize it. And it was like, it was so cool to see one benefit pay off another benefit and pay off another benefit. It was like almost like a snowballing thing. So it was really cool. And this, the challenge for us was just being able to execute it. Honestly, it was just making sure it was durable, making sure that it was consistent and all those things. And it sounded good. I mean, that was another challenge. So, but yeah, it's really cool to see it out there now and, you know, have people enjoying it.
What's the reaction been as far as tour? Cause I know you deal with a lot of the players and you get their reactions, and that's very important to you. You know, general consumer is important too, but you know, the tour guys are really the living laboratory. So what was feedback from them like?
Yeah. So this is an interesting one always for us, because we don't show it to them before it's done. Like in the past, there may have been some like early testing, but these days we really want to make sure that when they first see this club and they first hit it, that it's like perfect, you know, because if you show them something too early and it's not great, then they kind of get a little bit of a sour taste in their mouth of like, oh, I don't know if this new one's any better than my old one. And you fight that uphill battle. And plus we also like the fact that when we show it to them for the first time, this genuine surprise and delight in their eyes. And I think you see in some of the spots that we release on social and things like that, where when Tiger first pulls the head cover off and it's just that like, oh my God, this is incredible. So we want those reactions. But in terms of the feedback, so what we tend to do nowadays is really work on getting as much feedback as we can on their current drivers to work on their next one. Right. So when Sim first came out, we spent a lot of time deciphering exactly how that's performing, you know, what the tendencies are in that club. And, you know, what, if any, improvements could we make to it and then incorporate those in the new one? And so, you know, that's kind of been my goal of getting that. And I think for me, the validation this year was really that initial reaction was super positive from the guys. And you know, when the whole thing with like seeing the club for the first time, that was first of all, like a huge thing, like, oh my God, what is this thing? Full carbon, the whole blue thing around the back. Yeah. That was like just... And then, but even just the first few swings, when they hear it coming off the face, it sounds fantastic. And it's sort of in that right wind. Obviously, it's not perfectly dialed in on their first few swings, but those subjective things are all there. They're ticking the boxes on how straight the top line is, how it sits on the ground, how it sounds coming off the face. And so then we had kind of a short off season, right, this year. So we've spent a couple of weeks now with DJ trying to get him ready for Kapalua. He has kind of a, you know, unusual setup. He likes his club to be really fade biased. He likes them to go right, because he always plays that fade, doesn't want anything to go left. And so with DJ, and then with Colin, he's a much more visual guy than DJ. You know, DJ is still like not necessarily super bothered about lines being different. Colin is like that thing is a millimeter off looking here, and visually it's got to tick for him. Plus, obviously, the performance. Working with those two guys to get those in play at Kapalua is a big one. And obviously Rory, Tiger, Matt Wolf, those guys haven't teed it up yet this season.
Yeah.
But I've been in constant contact with the tour guys, and their reports are they are loving their new drivers. So that's music to my ears, because I always in slight panic every spring of like, is there something we missed? Is there something that didn't quite work out that we didn't anticipate or whatever? Or they find something out about the performance that we hadn't seen in our thousands of tests that we've done already, because that wouldn't be the first time either. We've definitely learned that stuff from pros that we could never extract from our typical player testing. So,
How does a player like Maria Fassi kind of mix in for that? Like, you know, she's obviously you know, different as far as the player is concerned, but obviously golf swing's amazing, but you know, has a different dynamics than what some of those PGA Tour players have.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I would say what's interesting about her is, you know, she obviously hits it really far. And she's one of the longest hitters on the LPGA, but she's actually in a very similar window launch spin speed wise to what our player testers are. Like that's because we use basically scratch golfer, male golfers, for most of our player testing. And so we actually know more about what she's going to see than what we know, like what Tiger and Rory and those guys are going to see. Cause we don't have guys who are swinging at 125 on our player test panel.
Right.
I mean, our fastest guy maybe is like a 118, like he's fast, maybe up to 120, but we don't see those guys regularly like that. So for her, you know, obviously same thing. We try to get feedback from her and I don't have a lot of feedback from her yet on this one. I know that Sim, she really liked. But again, I think she, like LPJ should be in a really good window because we know a lot about that swing speed of player and how this club performs for that player. And obviously she's also new to our stable. So it's kind of like, well, like with any new players, with Matt Wolf and Colin, the same thing. I'm like, I'm still getting to know those guys and our team's getting to know them in terms of how to interact and what kind of feedback they can provide. And so I don't have like a ton of like just things I can go to, whereas like DJ, you know, I've known him for 7-8 years and I know exactly, you know, what kind of things. And obviously he's super close with our guy Colin Core. So those guys are for me, just I'm more familiar with it.
Fairway Woods, just looking at it, obviously last year's Sim, you know, the Fairway Wood was a monster. I mean, that was the easiest way to really describe it. That's a big mountain to try to have to climb and add to. So what was the challenge there for you guys for fairways?
Yeah. Well, so the funny thing about that is in some ways, and this is going to sound weird maybe again, but the Thai fairway was the club that I probably had the most things I wanted to kind of improve on from generation to generation of all the clubs that we had, because it was a true first gen. That club was the Sim Thai is like a true first gen. And when you have a true first gen of anything, it's like, you're not going to nail every single thing on it. I don't care what field you're in, what product you're making. The first gen of anything isn't the best thing that can possibly be made. So as good as that club was, I mean, ultimately it got its performance from that unique construction that we had. Right. So it was sort of like, with all the know-how that we have at TaylorMade of how to make Thai metal woods, how to make fast faces with speed pockets, like there was really no way that club wasn't going to perform well. Like it would have been some sort of weird circumstance if that had not performed well. So let me just put it out that way. And then we had V-Steel as well. So that club we knew was going to be good. But there was also things that, you know, I almost immediately was like, oh, you know, we could have done this a little better. And so one of the things I for sure felt like was we maybe weren't in the right window shape size wise with that club. Our goal was to sort of like invite more people in to play our premium Thai fairway, because with M5 obviously it was a smaller head. It's, you know, that wasn't necessarily for the mass market.
No, a little intimidating.
So we're like, okay, let's make it a little bit bigger. So we brought it up to 180 cc's, but ultimately it was for me a little bit too big, because it was basically the same size as the other one. And I felt like, you know, yes, we're going to get more people buying it for that reason, but it also sort of doesn't give people a choice. If you like a smaller fairway, we didn't really have one in the lineup. So I felt that was a problem. But then, and then the other part was, when you make that fairway that big with that much weight on the bottom, you really are not, you don't have a lot of discretionary weight to make the club more forgiving. You know, because the perimeter weighting kind of goes out the window a little bit when you have all that stuff.
Everything's in the bottom. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things, those are the two kind of key things I wanted to do, was up the inertia on the club and really tweak the shaping to make it just look better and be a little bit more workable looking, you know? And I think one of the things that is interesting too, that you'll understand, is that when you put Bulge and Roll on a club, it's designed sort of as a function of other mass properties of the club. So for example, a higher inertia club would typically have a flatter face because it's going to have less twisting and off center hits, so you don't have to correct that gear effect as much, right? With a Thai fairway, our Sim Thai being a fairly low inertia club, because think about it too, there's no heavy steel in the hosel and those areas that are, you know, they're not helping your CG, but they're helping inertia. So when you have a lower inertia club, you have to make the face more round. That was another thing that I didn't love about the sim tie, in the sense that I felt like we could have, the club was quite big and then it was quite roundy as well.
So you end up with a shape that doesn't always appeal to everyone. Especially
Appeal to everyone, yeah. Right. So by actually making it smaller and making it higher inertia, we're able to flatten the face. So now it's a little bit easier to line up. It looks better, I think, at address. And it gives golfers an option between 170 cc and 190 cc fairway wood, and you can kind of really go either way. And then sort of being able to tweak a little bit with the CGs. I mean, this new one is every bit as long as obviously the original, maybe even longer. And then off center is just going to be better, even though it's smaller. So I think for me, that was a cool achievement. And we tweaked the V-Steel sole a little bit on this one. We tweaked the V-Steel a lot on the steel fairway, where it's got that dual level sole. That one performs incredible from a versatility standpoint. So yeah, it was fun. It was definitely fun to work on those, but those were some cool improvements, I think, on those that make that club even better.
Last thing then, just touching on the hybrids, obviously a slightly different look. You've kind of learned some different things in that department, yeah, as far as working with various players, but you know, what are the key things there for you?
Yeah. So that the hybrid, you know, kind of bringing the second hybrid in, there's a little bit of a story in that in itself, because obviously last year when we brought out Sim Max Rescue, the gapper was in the line. So we had three clubs in the gapper line, and this was sort of, you know, an addition to the, I would say, that part of the bag. And so that's why we only had one last year. And then coming into this year, gapper is out, but we have this new Sim DHY UDI product. Originally, this was going to be part of that lineup, so we were going to have essentially a new gapper series, for lack of a better word, that was going to present sort of that driving iron, that utility iron, and then having a kind of a players looking hybrid in there. But one of the things we really wanted to do with this, and we felt strongly that if we're going to have another hybrid in the lineup, we definitely wanted it to be sort of well played on tour and well respected with good players. And we felt like gapper just didn't get traction, you know, for whatever reason. So we actually needed a little bit more time to get feedback. And so we couldn't make it in time for having it with the Sim UDI DHY, to be honest with you. So we took the time to test. And this was the only metal wood of 2021 that was actually tested on tour before we launched it. Right. Yeah. So we actually had these sort of mules, so to speak. I have a couple actually at my desk. So we had some of these out there that were basically mules of the new one to get feedback on launch and spin, because that was one of the things that always has been challenging with hybrids is, like, what are you really looking for there? Like, are you looking for just another way to hit a fairway wood a little bit more easily? Are you looking for a club that you can work and maybe shape and hit low shot? Like, what? Like, it just depends on the player, right? So knowing what we had with Sim Max was such a good recipe. Obviously, we got in play on tour with tons of guys. Rory loves it. Colin still playing. I mean, that club, we didn't need to change that club. That club was like, okay, you're good. If you like that performance, great. We're going to keep making that kind of a club. And that's what the Sim 2 Max Rescue is, in the sense that it's just a little bit more inertia in that club and some small shape tweaks, but it's basically the same type of idea. With the other one, we wanted to make something that was still sort of modern in the sense of speed and forgiveness. Like, it has that big speed pocket. It's got a really fast face, but it should do something differently, right? There's right. No point, again, like that kind of back
can't
to
just the have the same club. Yeah.
It shouldn't just be the same club with a different shape. So yeah. One of the things that we dialed in with Tour's help was, what is the right spin rate for this club? You know, we ended up adding about 300 RPMs to this versus the Max, and bringing the launch down by about a degree from the other one. So they have the same exact ball speed. So both of them are as fast as we can.
Just a different window.
But just a different window, yeah. And then obviously combine that with the look and kind of slight turf interaction differences, it's just going to play like a different club. So if you're more of a, you like to hit some low ones, you like to draw and fade it in and have a little bit more of a controlled flight, maybe hit into greens more, that Sim 2 Rescue is going to be for you. And then guys who just want to kind of hoist it up there, get it up with a little bit lower spin just to get, you know, that distance going out there, the Max is perfect, right? So that was really cool, I think, to see come to life. And when we showed that to Rory at the tour shoot, he was just like, oh my God, what is this thing? Like, and he really liked the original Rescue. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he shows up with the new Rescue in the bag this year. And obviously the look is different too. It's only metal wood that doesn't have the chalk paint on the top.
Right.
So
yeah. It's kind of funny how he's sort of changed his tune. You know, he's all of a sudden become this hybrid guy when he was guy forever.
Yeah. I never expected that, honestly. You know, of all the guys, I was like, why is Rory now the hybrid guy, to your point? Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
All right, thank you, Tomo, for that insight. Scotty, as per usual, doing a great job. Would have loved to have been there. Didn't get an invite. It's all good.
Well, you know, middle of the day, figuring you might have been busy with, you know, work and stuff like that. And yeah.
It's all right. Don't worry about inviting me to your parties, whatever. Well, it's the start of the season, Scott. We had a full year of tournaments and a really weird year. And I came up with this idea. I'm sure I've stolen it from somewhere. I don't know where I came up with this idea. It just kind of came in my head. So if somebody else did it, you can call me out on Twitter and I'll give them full credit. I don't care. But this idea is a game for us where I'm going to go through every tournament from last year. And you're going to, how about this? We're going to do every tournament that's being played this year. And you have to tell me the last winner of that tournament. So there are going to be some tournaments here that I list that were played in 2019. That weren't played in 2020 that you're going to have to figure out the last winner. And what we're going to do is we go through each tournament. We're going to kind of talk about our memories of that tournament from the last year, because last year definitely was a blur. So let's go through it. How comfortable do you feel about going through this game? How many tournaments do you think there were that, how many, like, what do you think? 10%, 15% you're getting right?
I'll go 15%. I mean, part of the thing is it's such a blur during the season, and, you know, pay attention more to the Masters, obviously pay attention to the tournament so we can discuss in the TV. But I mean, everything turns over so quickly. You go from one and you're on to the next one. So sometimes there's a lot of confusion that way. So we'll see how I make out.
All right. So our first tournament is this week. The American Express was played last year at the PGA West course as well. Who picked up the win last year, Scott?
Ooh, Hadwin was in the mix. Obviously didn't win.
Did not win.
And then it ended up being, I know there was like three guys right at the end. Was it a playoff?
I'm not looking at the leaderboard here. If you want me to do leaderboards, we're in trouble. We can do that as we go.
I was just trying to remember, even if you didn't have it in there, if you remembered what it was.
Oh, no, I would not have remembered this one.
I think it was a younger guy, maybe a first win or a second win, but I couldn't pull it off the top of my head. Maybe a guy who came up from the Corn Ferry Tour.
It's pretty good. Andrew Landry picked up the win, so I think that was his first win tour, if I'm not mistaken.
I would think so.
Clearly,
no, I don't even
at this point too.
Don't even remember that one.
The early ones are where we're going to struggle, because at this point we're still taking golf for granted, right? Like, yeah, we're thinking, sure, hey, everything's good. We were talking summer trips. I think I'm like a week away from going to Phoenix at this point to play golf. The virus going on in China. We're like, yeah, it's, you know, we hear about these every year. Nothing happens, right? And boy, did we find out? All right, we head to Torrey Pines after that for the Farmers Insurance Open. Who picked up the win at the Farmers?
I know this one. The only reason I know this one is that I have a couple of guys that I've traveled with a little bit, a couple of Aussies. So they're always talking about their players. So I know it was Leishman that won this one.
Yeah, Mark Leishman. Yeah. I don't really remember much about that tournament either. Did Tiger play in that even?
I couldn't remember. Even tell you that. Yeah.
All right, the next tournament, I was actually at this tournament, and when I read the name, I was shocked.
You still didn't know?
No. The Waste Management Phoenix Open took place February 4th to 7th. Who picked up the win there?
No dice.
This is a complete shock to me.
Okay, I was trying to think. Okay, I can remember.
I'll give you a hint. It's the complete opposite of the type of winner that should happen at this tournament based on what the tournament's known for.
So it's not like an overpowering guy. Obviously it's not. Obviously Phil didn't win it. Fowler didn't win it. Was it a prominent player?
Oh yeah.
Oh, No, I'm forget it. I'm out for this one.
Webb Who was it? Simpson.
Oh,
he won right. in a playoff wow. over Tony Finau.
Okay. Now I remember Finau driving it over into the sand or something on the left side. He went across the lake or something like that. So
yeah,
I couldn't have told you Simpson win. That's for
no,
sure.
that was crazy. Would not have known Jeez. That. This is funny to go back to.
This is insane.
Yeah. This next one should be pretty easy. The AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am was won by
Nick Taylor. That's an easy one. Obviously got his second PGA Tour win, outdueled Phil Mickelson, and it was a great win. And we didn't know what was around the corner, and so it was a big win for Nick.
One of my favorite weeks of the year, the Genesis Invitational out at Riviera, who picked up the win there. Big purse too.
Yeah. I know that one because, I was on a FootJoy, product launch today and he made an appearance in the, live, portion of that. It was Adam Scott.
Wow. That would have been tough. That is a very good looking man. Did you ever get an understanding of his hat situation? Have you heard anything about that?
You know what, and I should look into that as far as his contract and how that's gone, but obviously it looks like it's totally Uniqlo as far as his clothing now. I don't have any particular details of that, but that's one I'll definitely dig into just to see if there was a contract modification there. And obviously he's still part of the, you know, the FootJoy family, but you know, no Titleist lid.
Nice. All right, we got a back-to-back one here. Both of these happened at the same time. We had a WGC event happening down in Florida. It's in Florida this year. It was in Mexico still. At the same time, the Puerto Rico Open was happening. Mm-hmm. Who won these events, Scott?
Do I have to say his name?
Yeah.
It's the guy who's playing in Abu Dhabi this week, Patrick Reed.
Patrick Reed won the WGC. Do you remember who won Puerto Rico?
That was definitely one of the young guys, because I remember talking about it being an opportunity, and we were talking about that week of, you know,
it's always the week somebody breaking through. Up the win. Yep.
It wasn't Henrik Norlander. Was it
Henrik Norlander? No. It was Victor Hovland. He recently broke the curse too, which I think I'm going to get to.
One of the Scandinavian guys. See?
That's fair. The last tournament before the Players, which ultimately was shut down. I said I was going to make you go through these tournaments of who won in years past, but it doesn't actually give me that information. So we're just going to go with tournaments that actually happened last year, I guess. The Arnold Palmer Invitational down at Bay Hill, the last full tournament. This is where we were starting to worry. What's going on? Are we going to continue? Full fans here. You know, we still had tons of fans. Who won that one?
Another guy who's in the news, who's over in Abu Dhabi right now, because he just re-signed with Ping today. That was Tyrrell Hatton.
Nice.
That was an entertaining one that week. I remember that there was a few outbursts, and then he marched on to the victory. So I can remember watching that one.
That is correct.
Now, wasn't there another one in between? Because I recall Albin Choi's boss winning an event.
So that was the Honda, so you're right, there was the Honda Classic where Albin Choi won, Sanjay won, sorry, Albin Choi won.
Albin won. I'm technically won not nice cash.
I'm technically not going in order right now. Maybe I should go fine. In order.
It doesn't matter
because they moved it, right? Because the Players was the Players was that last event played. So there is a couple other tournaments that didn't get played last year. So the Valero Texas Open didn't get played. The Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship, like a couple we don't really need to get to, haven't been played. But the we did have a return. We played at RBC Heritage. Was that the first tournament back? No, it wasn't.
No, it was Colonial, because I remember Morikawa missed the pot.
Yeah, that one's easy. We'll get to that later. But who won the RBC Heritage?
Oh, that was Webb. I remember that one because he tested positive, I think, pretty soon after that. Did he not?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. We missed the Zurich last year. We missed the Valspar, the Wells Fargo. These are just dumb names.
That's weird, eh?
Can we get rid of these? The AT&T Byron Nelson. What a shame to miss it. Who won?
I was listening, actually, you know, just yeah. to note that as far as talking about the tournaments, I was listening to a press conference earlier with Brooke Henderson, and, you know, she played 10 events last year, and she's like, yeah, I'm used to playing 30. And I'm like, wow, that's just such a difference in lifestyle. And she said the one thing that was notable from her press conference was she said she had to find out a different way to get herself prepared for tournaments because she was so used to playing that all of a sudden she had all this gap of time and she had to learn how to deal with that. So she says
cash games or something like that.
I don't know, but
I don't see her doing that.
No. But, and she's somebody who likes to play a lot. So I find that interesting. And I think that's probably something good for her because if she goes forward, you know, she's not going to play 30 some odd events, you know, she's obviously going to probably taper down her schedule. So that's probably an important skill for her. But again, it still seemed odd. It jumped out at me in the fact that here's somebody who plays, you know, 30, 31 events. And all of a sudden I played 10.
Yeah. Very odd. PGA Championship. Who won it?
Morikawa.
There you go.
Okay. Of course, yeah. You know, Scheffler. So yeah,
Charles Schwab Challenge. Wow, that's a tough one to say. The Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial Country Club. If you had to say that five times fast, you'd struggle. No. Who won that?
Obviously, as I said, Morikawa missed the pot. And was that not the return?
That was the return to golf, yeah.
Of Berger.
Daniel Berger, yep. Yeah. We after the Charles Schwab, we will be heading to the Memorial. Who won the Memorial last year?
Oh, that was Rom because he missed that. He had that penalty on the side of the green on the one.
See what I mean, folks? This guy's insane. I'm not going to struggle. Like, has everything has details.
Well, and you see how I remember it though. I don't remember it by score. I remember it by a certain situation or something that I saw or a putt, and that just sort of triggers a memory.
We tentatively June 10th to the 13th, we will be playing the RBC Canadian Open at St. George's. Rory McIlroy, I think that's pretty obvious, won the last Canadian Open. The U.S. Open's pretty obvious, comes up right after that. It is at Torrey Pines this year. Bryson won the U.S. Open. I think those are easy for you.
That one's a no-brainer.
Yeah. What about the Travelers Championship at TVC River Highlands?
Now, was that... That was the start of DJ's run, was it not?
See what I mean? Like, you're going to get everything right here.
Well, again, it's just, I go back and
I guess he had a 323-yard drive.
No, I just remember writing something, you know, one of the podcasts, we were talking about, you know, some of the wins and his, like, six events in a row or whatever, and I just remember writing that that was kind of the start of his big streak, so. Yeah. And I enjoy watching that tournament, too. So.
Yeah. The Rocket Mortgage played. Do you remember who won the Rocket Mortgage?
I do, because that was Detroit Country Club, and that was the week when everybody was going nuts over Bryson.
Right. It's a start.
You know, it was rock hard. You know, the ball was going a long way, and I can remember he got that one hole where the water was on the one side, and he was a mile over to the right and then pitched out into the water. But, yeah, that's when everybody started really talking about Bryson.
I'm going to throw you one here. This wasn't played last year, but I'm curious if you remember who won it in 2019. After we go to Detroit this year, we will be heading to TPC Deer Run in Silvis, Illinois for the John Deere Classic. Do you remember who won in 2019?
Well, it's usually either Steve Stricker, Zach Johnson, or Jordan Spieth. So I'll just say it's one of those three. I don't remember specifically who it was.
This was actually Dylan Fratelli. I would have remembered that one. Yeah, that's when he kind of came on the scene with his stupid long sleeves and... He was rocking Nike back then. Like, this is a guy, like, opposite. Like, he was, remember, head-to-toe Nike gear?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't fit the bill at all.
No.
We're going to head to the Barbasol after that. And then the Open Championship, which is crazy to think the last one was Shane Lowry.
Yeah. Still the reigning Open champion.
Reigning Open champion. Haven't seen him since. The 3M Open did happen last year. Another great golf course. Not TPC Twin Cities. Who picked up the win there?
Was that Wolf?
No,
he won that the year before. He won that in 19.
I don't have the whole list. I haven't actually educated myself on the 3M Open.
Yeah, no. What? You haven't?
Yeah, it came in with the Detroit. They were back to back in 2019 as like that. Those two new tournaments that kind of came in just had brutal fields.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, drawing a blank on that one.
Michael Thompson.
Oh, well,
yeah, that's one.
That would be why.
Yeah, that's one's gonna take a people a bit to figure out. The Olympics will be happening after the 3M Open, which
Justin Rose.
I almost said gold Matt medalist. Kuchar.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I almost said Matt Kuchar.
I think Kuchar won the bronze.
Ah, right. The Barracuda Championship. Who won last year?
We were talking about him last week. That's Richie Wierenski.
Hate that guy. WGC at TPC Southwind last year was won by...
TJ won it the year before.
This was actually entertaining this year.
It's always just a sweat fest. So, yeah, missing that one.
See, you failed. You haven't mentioned Justin Thomas yet, right? He had a good year. So he picked up the win there. And that's where Brooks kind of came on at the end. And then he dunked it. And then
we didn't talk about that. Brooks is back this week. He's playing at the FedEx. Or the Amex, sorry.
Nice. Wyndham Championship after the WGC. Who won that?
The guy who most recently dealt with COVID, who couldn't play in the Tournament of Champions, Jim Herman.
Yeah, that's too bad for Jim. I really hope next year they let him come to this one.
You know what? That would be...
Because this is a guy that's not going to play in a lot of Century Tournament of Champions.
No, he's not. So, yeah, you're right. That wouldn't be neat to see that. And, hey, they obviously made some, adjustments this year in taking the winners to kind of fill the field or taking the top 30 from the FedEx. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them extend that invitation.
All right. These last three should be easy. We're now into the playoffs here. The Northern Trust...
DJ, by a million.
By a million, followed by the BMW Championship.
That was Rambam.
Which is John Rahm, and then the Tour Championship.
And that, of course, was DJ.
Yeah. So, Scotty, you actually...
Not bad, yeah.
You went 15-4.
Okay. Yeah. A little better than I thought.
Yeah, that's impressive. I don't think I would have... The hard ones are definitely... It's a weird year, though, but when you go through them, that is superstar after superstar.
Yeah, and I think that makes it easier. As you see, it's a lot harder when you get the Michael Thompsons and the Landrys.
And a full season, you're going to struggle. Like, if we went back to 2019, you would probably struggle through something like that because you don't get that compact season where these guys like DJ... Justin Thomas, they played a lot in that stretch, like more, they usually would stretch it out. They still played so much. So, that was very good. So, cool. I'm looking forward to a couple of those tournaments. Adam Scott said, there's five tournaments a year or eight tournaments a year that are great. And then the rest are just for entertainment. So look forward to a couple of them. And I think the Canadian Open's the one that's just just really hope by June, but at this point I might be changing my mind if we're doing this. I'm not feeling good at this point unless we somehow get these vaccines and all these players in time.
Yeah, I got that question again from somebody, and obviously as we look at things like the NHL, separating and having a North Division separate for, the Canadian teams, and obviously the American team staying down there, it looks a little bit more dicey, that's for sure. I mean, I know they'll want to do it. I saw the idea floated that, hey, maybe they'll do the Canadian Open in the States. But it's the sponsors might want that, but
playing
that would
like
be
Detroit. If we had
know.
To do it, what's the most Canadian city? Ooh. I'm going Minnesota. I don't even know if there's a good golf course there.
Yeah, you know what? If it happens and they have to move it someplace else, I'm going to say it's going to take place someplace in North Carolina or South Carolina just because of RBC's ties to those two states.
Yeah, so. I mean more where would you want it? What is the most Canadian American city?
Oh, boy.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Seattle, maybe? Somewhere like it's got to be right near the border.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Buffalo.
Buffalo, that would be a tournament. They need a tournament in Buffalo. Is there a golf course there that
there's lots. There's lots of good courses.
Good one for a tournament. When was the last time tournament was played in Buffalo?
Well, they've had Corn Ferry Tour events there. So,
but only a PGA Tour event.
Yeah, it would have been quite some time, that's for sure. But yeah, I would say definitely, Buffalo would be a contender for sure. Yeah, Detroit. Yeah, as you say, but I mean, they've already got an event there, but I could certainly see it. You know, there's lots of great properties that are there. Seattle, as you mentioned, I don't know if there's really other southern, you know, enclaves, we'll call it, but you know, we've talked about Phoenix before, and there's close to 500,000 Canadians that go there in the wintertime. Not that Florida would be an option either, but I think it would be something northern. But you know, if they have to come to that solution, you know, I think we're at Southern
Carolina. It would be very funny though if they did it and then they just went like full blown, like typical Canadian stuff, like just making fun of us, like
with the boards
like,
and everything.
Throw up the boards, like fake snow, Tim Hortons all over the place.
All the Marshalls in plaid,
yeah, plaid. Like they look Coors Light, like just like like Molson Canadian. Just go full blown Canada.
Hey, ever?
Yeah, just make it like. Make it so cringeworthy bad that it's funny. Great.
That would be funny. It'd be like, you know, Beaver Tails buffet
poutine
for the players.
Yeah, poutine. Yeah. Like, let's just go for it. Why not? That's good.
Love it.
All right, let's grab a quick break. Let's come back to the mailbag, Scott, and then hit the tip of the week.
Sounds great.
All right, Scotty, let's hit the mailbag. What do we got this week?
All right, let's get rolling here. First question, what golf technology are you most excited about for 2021? Any thoughts on that one?
I haven't really thought too much about it. Nothing's like popped out where I'm just super, super excited. I don't know why. Yeah. I have my new driver, the TSI 3 from Titleist. I'm looking forward to playing. Got my hands on some of the new golf balls, which I'm liking. Can't go into any more detail on that right now, but liking that. There just hasn't been anything that's super popped out to me. So I don't know. I mean, the Sim 2 is in a lot of people's bags really quickly, yeah. Which is shocking. I thought it's really cool that you can pop off the back and kind of customize more of your color on it. Or like, you know, I don't think you actually pop it off. You order
no.
your
you
custom
can order it
color,
that way, yeah.
But it,
yeah.
It is designed that way. So that's kind of cool. But I don't know. It feels like a weird year in the sense that I was just kind of happy golf's back. And I haven't really heard of anything. I saw some interesting shoe concepts from FootJoy today. Yep. You know, there's some nice Jordans coming out. Maybe it's time for a new pair of shoes, add to the 20 others. But what about you? What have you seen so far that excites you?
You know, there's going to be a lot of things we're probably going to see in the next week or so, you know, with the PGA virtual show going on. I would say the thing that's probably got my interest the most, which is a carryover from last year, is the more personal launch monitors and the pricing coming down on that. Last year, we saw the introduction of the FlightScope Mevo Plus, which was kind of 2000 US. Gave people the option of having something that was radar based. They could, you know, use it as a little bit of a simulator at home as well. And we're seeing another model of that. Bless you. And we're going to see Full Swing Golf has got one that they've been working on, and it's going to come in about the 4,000 US range. So it's still not, you know, super consumer friendly, but it's an indication of some of that technology and that pricing coming down. And, you know, a lot of people have obviously, you know, invested in $500 and $700 small little radar units that might tell them distance and, you know, simple things like that. But I think we're going to see an expansion of that market in the next little while. And I think this new Full Swing one, it's called the Kit, is going to be sort of the entry point like the Mevo Plus was and start to show us where that technology can go. These are not necessarily tools that are going to be used by, you know, the pros. But I think the consumer market is ripe for people that maybe want to have a personal launch monitor.
And you're excited because you're building your own sim. So that's probably why you're excited. I've actually... You know, the wife and I are talking about building the house in a couple of years, and I've kind of started the conversation. Yeah, we're gonna need to put in the budget about an extra $50,000 or so for a full blown sim if this is gonna be the last place we're living. So
just remember, you gotta sell it as the sim/movie room.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's gonna have the bar, everything. It'll be good. So I'm working on it. We're a few years out. I'll keep the listeners updated over the next couple years if we're still haven't been canceled by then.
Sounds good. All right, on to the next question here. Who's the best celebrity golfer you have ever watched play or played with?
Oh, wow.
That's an interesting one.
Hmm. Who do you got for it?
I kind of went through it. I mean, you know, I think what they mean by best is probably the best player. I would say when I went down to watch the Mary Lemieux tournament in Pittsburgh, I watched Dan Quinn, former NHL player and caddy for Ernie Els, play. And, you know, he's won a couple of the American Century Celebrity Championships. And, you know, he was a legit player. Like, you know, he was playing off plus one, plus two at that point, but solid as far as the swing was concerned, and way different than going and watching Bill Laimbeer, Gretzky, and Jordan, who were at that tournament. Yeah. And going, whoa, you know, if Jordan says, like Jerry D had said, you know, oh, my handicap is this, and it's certainly not. I mean, if Dan Quinn was a plus one and Michael Jordan was a three, Dan Quinn is a plus 10 compared to what I saw out of Jordan. So, you know, Dan Quinn might not be known to a lot of people, but obviously, you know, did many years in the NHL with Pittsburgh, Ottawa as well. But definitely the best of the players that I've seen that would be considered celebrities.
Yeah. That's where I'm struggling, where I know I've played with people that are quote unquote celebrities to some, but to me, I just don't,
I don't think of them as celebrities.
I just really don't care who you are. Or, you know, who if you have a Wikipedia page. So I just don't know. My first thing that comes to mind is, like, Tony Romo's really good. He's the guy that I still hope that they put him on some golf broadcasts in the off season, not just use him for football. I think he'd be great from that perspective. But, yeah, no, I can't even answer. I got nothing for you. Next question.
All right. We were talking about this earlier, the PGA show. The PGA show is next week, but it's virtual. What will you miss the most about being there?
And I guess khakis. Oh, go ahead. I've never been. Never got invited.
I've only been to 27 of them. But, yeah, there's definitely no shortage of khakis, that's for sure. I would say for me, it's probably not about product launches or anything like that. It's just going to be the interaction with a lot of people that you maybe don't get to see over the years. So it's going to be more the personal type things, you know, running into people that you may talk to on social media back and forth, and you end up running into in person down there, getting to meet them, getting to know them. I mean, you know, a good friend, Lisa Longball, who we've had on this podcast, you know, it was 12 years ago that we met at the PGA show at an outing. We happened to get paired together and had stayed good friends since then. So for me, it's going to be less about products or anything. It's just, it's all the hours after the show floor closes. You know, you're going to this event or that event, you know, social events, you're heading to different bars, restaurants, or whatever, meeting lots of different people around the world who eventually become your friends in the golf world.
Yeah, fair enough. Your answer, what he said.
All right, sounds good. Number four, we talked about her earlier. How many times do you think Brooke Henderson will win in 2021?
Well, if you actually look at her record, she's won every single year except for this year, right? She didn't pick up a win in 2020. Yeah. Short year, you know, only played 10 events. But if you go back from 2016 on, she's won twice a year every single year. Take away 2015, only won once. That was her first year out on tour.
Yeah, and she wasn't even a tour member at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So it's tough. Two's a lot. Like, two is a lot.
Two is a lot. Yeah.
So I think your number that you got to set it as is 1.5. And whether are you going to take the over or the under? I'm struggling there. I'm setting that number. Why don't you pick? I you know what? I'm feeling the under, unfortunately. I think it's a good year of top 10-ing in every single event like she always does. And it just, unfortunately, I just see maybe one win right now. I hope it's a major, but that's my hope. And hopefully she can shut me up, which she obviously does all the time.
I'm going to go one for certain. You know, obviously you could pick zero in this case, but I think she's going to win for sure. Two, it's ambitious. It's tough. I mean, they're tough fields. They're great players. They're the best players in the world. Is she capable of winning two? Yeah, she's capable of winning four. You know, if somebody's asking me this and I have to bet on it, one is going to be the number I'm going to sit on.
Yep.
All right, last one here. If you could only choose one, would you rather play golf alone or with a person you did not know?
If you asked me this at the start of 2020, my answer would have changed. My answer would have been like, yeah, I'll play alone. I don't need to play with somebody. But now I think back then we were just taking it for granted. Legit, give me some random. I don't care. Yeah. I think we learned something. Like, we'll have a good conversation. Yeah. I think we're going to see, you know, the roaring 20s are legit coming back. And you're going to experience your second one in your life. You did the 1920s and now the 2020s.
Second pandemic for me.
Yeah, second one. It's crazy. You got through both without even a scratch. And just a couple gray hairs. At least you have hair. As I was saying, give me the random. I think I've played with randoms before. It's usually a good time. I prefer walking when I'm with a random. That way you're not just stuck in a golf cart with them. That's a little much. Give me the random person. I think it'd be a good time. And I just see that's where the world's going. Like, when bars open up, you're going to be talking to every single person. When you go to that next hockey game, right, and your team scores, high fives, hugs, it's going to – this world is going to be interesting. I cannot wait to get on the other side of this and see – how we've potentially changed for the better and just start to appreciate one another a little bit more in the company of human beings again. Is going to be interesting. Like, can you imagine, you know, you're probably thinking back to your years at that PGA show over the years, and you probably woke up some foggy mornings going onto that floor. I'm sure even in your brittle old age that when you get to your next one, it's going to be some later than late nights, just because like, I didn't know if I'd be back here again. I'm just really excited. And these are some old friends. So that's the type of thing. And who knows, maybe you make a good friend with this person on the golf course.
Yeah. I think that grateful theme is an important one. I think you're right. We're going to, at least for the first while.
We'll hate each other. Like, it'll be like,
yeah, exactly. They have a whole new appreciation for the fact that, you know, we do get to go out. We get privileged to do it. You know, we might be more interested in that person's story now. And instead of just having an awkward conversation, we might have a real conversation. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? I've seen enough of myself for the last little while. And I think a lot of us are in that same boat. So for me, put me with anybody. If they're a golfer, they're my friend. It's kind of the Harvey Pinnock, you know, was in his book. If you're a golfer, you're my friend. You know, obviously, you know, some people can maybe get annoying or something, and you may have not wanted to be with them. But if I'm given a choice, you know, you're going out solo or you've got somebody to go with you, give me somebody else. I'm a social animal. I want to talk to somebody.
Cool.
All right, that's the mailbag this week. Thanks, everyone, for sending those questions in. Keep them coming. We open up the mailbag every week. And keep passing on your questions. Make them as interesting and as challenging as possible. I think we like the theoretical, hypothetical ones where people kind of throw out something different for us. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, something that's involved with equipment or travel or stuff like that. But, you know, challenge us.
I love it. All right, Scott. Tip of the week before we wrap it up, another episode on the Tee Talk podcast, episode 98 this week. Before we get to the tip of the week, should we be expecting Wayne for next week, the great one, number 99? How have our people been in touch with his people?
I think he's still celebrating his hole in one, so I'm not sure if you know, he's gotten any messages back to us yet. How's that?
Yeah, maybe if all the listeners could just start. Does Wayne Gretzky have Instagram? It would be so brutal. Like, probably has a million followers and doesn't do anything on it. All right, give me a tip of the week.
All right, so what I want to talk about this week is the fact that there's not one way to place your hands on the golf club. Obviously, when people are learning the game, they're taught certain ways to do things. But if you're going for lessons sort of afterwards, everything that you do with your hand placement has to match up with everything else you do in your golf swing. So don't think there's only one way to do it. A good coach will work with you, work with your anatomy, work with what you're trying to do in your golf swing, how you're trying to control the club face and get you the best grip possible. So don't think it's absolute. There's one way to do it, multiple ways to place your hands on the golf club. The whole goal is just to hit better golf shots and match it up with everything else you do in the puzzle that is your golf swing.
Yeah, it's cool to work with a pro too, like how strengthening it can help with a draw, or loosening it can help with a, you know, a fade and all that. And you know, it's important. I struggle. I think my grip sometimes hinders me, but I also sometimes try to fix it. And I literally cannot hit a golf ball without doing that. So it's like, it's definitely something that you have to work with a pro. I would never recommend somebody try to fix their grip on their own, because I've seen the examples where somebody's done it and lost like 25 yards off because they're holding it completely different and just changes everything. So I like that. That's a cool little tidbit. It's one of those things too, right? Like, you could work with you're pro over Zoom on something like this.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, it really is a puzzle, and it's something that's fairly simple. And if your pro is really familiar with what you're trying to do in your golf swing, they can match up your grip better so that you can control the face the way you need to. And like I said, it really is a puzzle. The whole golf swing is. So, you know, it doesn't have to be an absolute one way. It can be adjusted to what you do with your body and how you swing.
I love it. All right, let's wrap it up there. Another good episode, episode 99 next week. Looking forward to it. Wayne Gretzky on the podcast, as you heard many times, or maybe somebody else. But yeah, it was a good time today. Any final thoughts? Are you going to watch some of the golf this weekend, Scott? Nowhere else you can go?
Yeah, probably, you know, with all the tours back, LPGA, PGA Tour Champions, obviously European Tour, PGA Tour, there'll definitely be some fill of it. And I think, you know, getting ready for next week with the virtual PGA show, a lot of product introduction in the next little while. So, you know, we mentioned a little bit off the top, but I think there'll be a lot more products that we're going to be talking about in the next week or so.
Yeah, maybe I'll have a better answer of products I'm excited to see. Because right now, you know, hey, I can be bought, people. You show me something I like, I'll start plugging it here. But I'm looking forward to that as a gear nerd. For me, I need it in my hands, and that's the problem. Yeah. Stores are closed. I don't know the next time I'll even, you know, and this is the weirdest part for me. This is the time of year where I usually work a lot on my game, and I'm hitting the range, you know, simulator, and you and I are working together, and we're not able to do that at all. I can't even, can't even go walk my dog without fear I'm going to be arrested right now. So, yeah, it's just a weird time. I'm just ready to get on the other side. Let's get those roaring 20s coming. Or at worst, let's just get golf courses open. A couple more months maybe. But let's leave it at that, Scotty. Thank you. For the listeners, thank you. We'll be back next week, episode 99. We're looking forward to it. Wayne Gretzky, right?
Yeah, sure. Right. We'll work on that.
All right. Have a good one, folks.